Welcome to the Organizational Transformation Kung Fu Podcast with your hosts, Sandy Varecchia and Jennifer Long.
Hi, and welcome to our podcast, Organizational Transformation Kung Fu. In our podcast, we talk about organizational issues and provide insight and learning to agile listeners around the world. We've called our podcast OT Kung Fu because we believe true organizational transformation takes time. It takes energy, and it takes patience. Much like the ancient art of Kung Fu, organizational transformation is a practice that needs dedication to master to get strong results. I'm Sandy Varecchia, Master Coach and Management Consultant at Satori Consulting in Toronto, Canada. And I'm here with my good friend Jen Long, Master Coach and Trainer at Management Possible in Denver, Colorado. Hi, Jen.
Hi, Sandy. How are you?
I'm good. I've been tatted for a while, so I'm excited about today.
I am excited about today because, you know, it's always fun to sort of get into the new year with clients, talk about what they're focused on, find out what the interests are, what's giving them the fits and where they need the assistance. And so part of what we want to talk about today is some of the buzzwords, especially some buzzwords we're hearing in particular, that are impacting human resources, organizational development, and it's a concern because it's a big deal. And so, this is really a conversation today around upskilling
and reskilling. There's the two buzzwords.
Yes.
So you know, I do a lot of strategic planning. I don't know how many I did last year. Probably upwards of 30. For different organizations. And I have to say, on everybody's to-do list comes the word upskilling appeared.
Right.
But as I have to say, when I circle back 6 months later, a year later, I don't see a whole lot of work done around upskilling. And so I'm curious about what's happening in your world.
Right. There's a lot of chatter. And so I think with the employment rate where it is in the U.S. and the fact that talent is really at a prime, right? Mm-hmm. That people or companies are really starting to recognize that learning and development and, you know, skilling their people is a critical area of their business. And so I think they spent a lot of time last year talking about it and looking at it and putting a name on it.
Yeah, because it really started from a couple of years ago, that whole war for talent
right.
was what people were talking about. And this is a byproduct of what needs to happen because they can't get the talent anymore. There isn't enough people out there that have the right skills for the types of jobs that we have today. And I was reading over the weekend, there's the PwC CEO survey, the 23rd annual one. So it was done back in the fall of 2019. And there was four themes that came out from these 1,500 and so CEOs. And one of them was the question, to upskill or not to upskill is no longer the question. Like the time is now that it has to happen and it has to be one of the most important things that they're doing for culture, for employee retention, for employee morale, and long-term longevity of the organization.
Right. And I thought some of the information that came out of that was really pertinent. I'm looking at it right now. And so it's the information in there around what it does for the business, right? It's not just about we need people with skills. It's about the impact that the act of training and developing has on the business.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the impact, but if you don't do it today and you don't start thinking about what are those gaps that we need to think about for the future.
Right. And I thought this statement here, and I'm kind of going to paraphrase a little bit, where it says, CEOs have embraced the potential of upskilling and are realizing the rewards such as stronger corporate culture, greater innovation, and higher workforce productivity. But I thought it was interesting when they say people who are actually paying attention to this, right? The furthest along in the upskilling journey cite employee retention as a primary challenge, whereas those just beginning find motivation and lack of resources to be the biggest obstacles. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but that is where I've got some clients full on, right? We just can't afford to get this on the table, right? We're fighting right. budget issues.
Right, right. And so, you know, the cost of training is one of those prohibitors, right? So if we spend a whole lot of time and money skilling these people, upskilling these people, the bottom line, the bottom budget of it all is too costly. And so it's a conundrum of, if you don't do it, they'll leave. If you do it, it's costly. And they're not seeing the ROI downstream, right? They haven't been able to really conceptualize what that ROI is going to be longer term.
Right. And you would think along the lines of what people have really started to understand about the power that development really has and how, you know, and I don't know if this is how CFOs are thinking about it or, you know, that top line, bottom line mentality, are they really looking at the cost of not doing it, right?
No.
Are they really looking at the risk of not doing it, which is much, much bigger than sucking it up and doing the overhead to take it on?
Right. Because it really becomes an acquisition tool as well, right? When you're looking at best in class organizations and where do you want to join and who do you want to be, where do you want to be part of? Organizations that spend money and invest in their people are where people want to go.
Right.
And so can you afford not to when there's a war on talent? When they have choice, and if you're not in that consideration set as to where do you want to work, then can you afford not to invest?
Right. And well, and so right, that's all the and what's going through my head too is I think some people are like, well, why is the skilling issue? Why is it an issue? Why don't people have the skills? Why aren't, when you're hiring, recruiting out of college, when you're getting these folks to go, why aren't they coming in ready?
Mm. Well, I think, I don't know, you can tell me what you think, but there's two different reasons. There's two different almost streams, right? We talk about the hard skills and the soft skills. Mm-hmm. So there's that whole, you know, change is fast now. The whole digitization side of things, those skills that people may have had in school, but they're changing so quickly that they need to keep up. Mm-hmm. Right. So the coding languages, all those sort of things, they are changing rapidly. And so you need to upskill to keep up with it.
Right. The technical thing is vertical.
Yeah, exactly. And the other side is that much kind of the same dilemma we've had for many years is that we keep promoting people for their functional skills, but we don't provide them those leadership skills and things like that. That is upskilling as well. That whole soft side, the EQ side of things, where people need to be able to deal in fast-paced change. They need to be able to deal in transformation and come out the other side a better person, but they need strong leadership skills for that.
Right, right. And I, the culture in which they've got to operate in, right? It's the, not only, it's a skill around the situational awareness. Where am I? What are my issues? Being able to identify, to even know which skills are going to play,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think that's part of it too, is I don't think universities can predict that. I don't think that any amount of, and maybe they're getting better at it because I do think corporations have been very forthright about, you know, they're not ready for prime time.
Right.
And what that skill set is, but I do think it's the more elusive skill sets around EQ. Mm-hmm. I think teaming skills, which we've talked about, right, are mm-hmm. some of the toughest skills because it's all human interaction, high accountability, high initiation.
Yeah.
Which so many people just struggle with as people in their lives, let alone in their work environment.
Yeah. And I think too, universities, they do struggle with that. But until people have the opportunity to kind of stretch some of those muscles, they don't know what the gap is. You know, so that's why there's so much kind of late in life learning. You know, lifetime learning has become, you know, a thing, and it should for everybody.
Right.
But I think it's important because you don't know what you don't know until you kind of get in those environments. So what do you think the role is of coaching?
Well, I think coaching is huge because the thing that just popped into my head was, there's those lifelong learners who have a lot of information and don't apply it.
Well, yes.
Right. And so I think coaching is a strategy and it's a mindset that becomes part of the culture. Mm-hmm. That if you're, so when you look at the role of the coach, right, the role of the coach is really the champion and the discipline. It's the person who's in the toolbox to some degree, right?
Yeah.
That they're the motivator and the catalyst for the development and the touch point for actual action. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people self-initiate enough. They can do it to a point, but the coach is there to really provide the feedback. Is it working? Is it not working? Right? Mm-hmm. It's the check-in as well as the, that, you know, that was a change, but not significant enough. That was an effort, but not big enough. And I think people misjudge what kind of effort, if they're really going to become, if they're going to master certain skill sets, what that really looks like. Mm-hmm. Because that's mm-hmm. not how we've learned in schools, right? We teach to the test in the US.
Yeah, that's very true. So let me throw a curveball at you then in terms of coaching. So we talked about cost, about skilling, and it being really costly, and coaching can be costly as well, right? Mm-hmm. And from a one-to-one coaching relationship. Are you seeing organizations that are doing one-to-many coaching relationships around upskilling on these particular skills?
I see very little of that other than team coaching, right? Where you're doing team skills. But I don't see the capacity. So from where I sit, right? So I've come from a history of when I book coaches and my coaching team, those guys are coaching full on. Right? They're doing a lot of people on skills and and the approach that we do as a vendor is something that they could do internally, but you've got to have people who know how to coach skill development. Mm-hmm. And I think because there's so much conflating between coaching and feedback, that they're not really entering the level of practice and application and reflection that coaching provides. They're doing feedback, which is sort of the impetus, but they're not getting it beyond into a applied new level of skill. And I think that's, you know, managers as coaches, a lot of them sit in a place of, I don't have the depth of toolbox. I don't feel to coach, so I don't go there.
Right. So it's much higher level.
Mm-hmm.
From a management perspective, and you're right, in that feedback zone. But do you think there's an opportunity to do one-to-many coaching?
In a work environment, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, think about how many times they get together to meet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What if your meeting was about skill development? You know, what would that do? What would that do for the people who are struggling with specific elements of the business, right? Matrix organizations where you get a lot of team to team strife, a lot of blame game shifting, all that kind of stuff going on.
Right. So there's an opportunity that what might be one thing that they think of in terms of we have to upskill on the soft side of things, not the coding and you know, Python and things like that. But and one of the things they could do internally is to shift some of those copious numbers of meetings to something that's more around of a skill development and upskill that way.
Right. And I think the focus of, I've been doing a lot of presentations in the last few weeks to different clients and parts of those clients. And one of the key pieces that keeps coming up for them is how management spends their time, right? And so we talk about this, do I spend my time on results because that's what I get paid for, right? And so I'm really looking at where are the results and how's that going? And if I'm not getting them, then I'm spending more time going, all right, we got to focus on the results.
Right.
Instead of, why did you get the results you got? chances are it's somebody who doesn't have a skill, or they've got a destructive behavior, whatever it is, that you've got a development opportunity. Mm-hmm. So that person can shift how they're making decisions to give you better results. And so you look at how much time do you spend just on the results versus how much time do you spend on the resources and the human resource in particular, right?
Right. And so doing gap analysis, really.
Right, doing gap analysis, spending one-on-one time.
Yeah.
Right.
Having those conversations about why did you miss the mark?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
How are you thinking about it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And analyzing, right? What am I really dealing with? And I think because mm-hmm. they're so results focused that they live in that definition of insanity around, you know, doing the same thing and expecting a different result.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the coaching and the time there and the skill there changes the equation.
Right, right. And are they buying into the conversations that you're having with them?
Are my clients buying into that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an upskilling problem.
Yeah. And there goes full cycle, or full circle, right?
Yeah, like, welcome back to the beginning. And right. And I think this is why this upskilling is still a thing, why it's a mm-hmm. problem, why it's becoming more ever present. It's like, we've named it, we talk about it. But I do think, and I would tell you, right, even coaches, professional coaches who are out there in the world trying to work with people are also at a deficit to help people practice and apply. Because that's the mastery part. That is where the skill shifts are.
Right.
It's not in a conversation and a go read an article and then talk to me about how you feel about it. It's not an intellectual exercise.
Mm-hmm.
There's a, with my background in theater, right? You can read the play and memorize the lines, right? You know what to say.
Mm-hmm.
But until you're on your feet in real time, in rehearsal, you don't get a sense of the dynamic.
Right.
Until somebody plays back to you. And when you're mastering the skill sets, and these are soft skills, so this is a lot of interpersonal relationship, right? Interpersonal communication. That's stuff that has an impact in real time. And unless you rehearse it, practice it, and apply it, you're not going to get a shift in how you do it. You can't, it's not an intellectual exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And so in thinking about that, right, when you're dealing with your coaching clients, it's really easy for people to go in their heads and go, okay, yeah, I got it. I got it. I got it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, say it. And the difference between what they're thinking in their head and when they start to talk is always a jarring experience, because it's never what's in their head.
Right. Right. So the awareness is critical in all of this, and them getting aware, but as you're saying, like fully aware of what it is mm-hmm. and what they need to go forward and, mm-hmm. and work on, but the practice, and how do we get them to practice, right? It's the, we're not with them every day. We might meet them every couple of weeks, maybe once every month,
mm-hmm.
and they have to, you know, they're reporting back, and mm-hmm. it's hard to get them to keep that sort of stuff top of mind because day to day gets in the way.
Right. Right.
And bosses want results.
Right. And behavior.
They don't want someone who's feeling, you know, good about their inability to have better relationships.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what they're paid for.
Well, right. But that's when you think what for you is, what's the secret in terms of the coaching experience that gets them to go do their applied practice?
So it's accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm having to come back and not get letting them off. I think a lot of the times they'll come back and they say, and this is what happened, and really digging into what that was and was it true application mm-hmm. versus a light opportunity to dabble and sending them back to try again.
Right. Right. And you can tell, if they actually did the homework or not, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's, you can't fake it.
Yeah.
And, that's part of, and I have to say, that's the discipline part of coaching. And I think when you're an external coach, that discipline works easier than when you're running internal coaches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think internal coaches tend to be a lot more accommodating.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, we can afford to be less accommodating, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not in the culture, we're not in the day-to-day. We can afford to take a step back and be perhaps a little more blunt about things.
I think we can afford to be a little bit more, I think that's what they're looking for, right? Well, on the external end is really, can you hold this guy's feet to the fire?
Right, right, yeah. And so, you know, we started talking about upskilling and so, and the role of coaching and upskilling, the role of HR and upskilling. And I think there is a huge opportunity for organizations to think about these other tools like coaching as a way to upskill, as a way to move the dial on that whole notion of upskilling, because it is those skills, we know the gap is widening and it's widening more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so from an HR perspective, it's really grappling and getting them to grapple with what's missing. And so there's going to be those hard set skills that they need to really figure out kind of what the new tomorrow look like and who do we have to fill those gaps and what do we need to do to either upskill or reskill, which is giving them new tools.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the need for coaching and keeping people accountable to upskilling themselves, right? As well as working with coaches to help them, you know, bridge those gaps and having those conversations about what those gaps are.
Right, right. So when you think of the, I'm thinking of, because you had mentioned early on that when you're doing strategic planning with clients, right? This comes up, this whole area of focus. And so when you drill down and you build the goal, we're going to go do this upskilling, and then you really start to get into, all right, well, what are the priorities, right? So what are the hot skills that companies need?
Right.
Right.
And it'll vary, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they need to do that analysis depending on the type of company that they are.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see them doing that. I you know, in my heart of hearts right now is this feeling of we've named it, we've got an upskilling problem, but they really haven't done that analysis to find out what they need to do about it.
Right.
And that's disconcerting to me.
It is. It is. And I think this will be the year that those kind of things get a little bit more clear because they have to.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What exactly are the skills? Because I, you know, obviously one which is going to show up for most companies is EQ.
Yeah. Yes.
Right? Emotional intelligence is a big thing because we are becoming so technically driven that you get a lot of geeks, a lot of engineers, a lot of technically savvy people who have a good hard skill set. But the people side is the struggle.
Right. Right. And what about those people that don't have those skills today? Maybe we can't retrain them or reskill them to gain those skills. Maybe they're a little bit older. Maybe they're in the sunset side of their career. But is there something that we could do for them in terms of providing them higher EQ roles to help? And I was reading this thing about this this notion of reverse mentoring.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And maybe there's more that go on where maybe the older people can be mentored by younger people in terms of those hard skills that they don't have, and that they could reverse mentor in terms of the leadership and the EQ side of things that the younger people don't have.
Right. Right. And I think that if you're going to be effective, especially if you're up, you know, you want that trajectory. We get like people who are anxious to be promoted fast. They want those experiences. They want to do that. And I think the secret to that is if skill number one, be a learner, learn how to learn, learn how to keep up to date and self-initiate on it.
Yes.
Right. So self-initiation and being a learner are going to get you way further than being an expert on something.
Mm-hmm. Right. And not waiting for HR or for your manager to identify what skills that you might need.
Right.
Right. That right. initiative is bold and necessary
right.
to get ahead in a really quickly changing world where, you know, the skill sets might be similar across the group of people that you're comparing yourself to, that you're working within.
Mm-hmm.
How do you differentiate?
Right, right. If you're waiting to be tapped, if you're waiting to understand what, you know, what do they want us to learn, right? If you're waiting for someone to come and assess you. In fact, I did a grow up video the other day, which is a little moment I'm doing on how to be a better version of yourself. I was like, self-awareness, skill number one, right? Mm. And if you don't know who you are and you don't know how to find out who you are, right? It's like, get an assessment. Know something about how you drive and what your thing is so that you can, it's a huge resource of knowing where I need to focus, where my short stack's probably going to be, where my blind spots probably are. And that's a great starting point, right? If you want to do your own diagnostic on what's my skill gap, you have personality assessment, right? A strength finder, something big. Here's the stuff you lean into. So what's all the stuff that sits on the side?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting. I'm doing a young leaders program, but the young leaders aren't young leaders. They're, you know, in their, you know, probably late 30s, early 40s, mm-hmm. mid 40s. And we're starting with personal brand. Mm-hmm. What is your personal brand? And then we're going to go into the other aspects of, you know, things that we're talking about, that what gaps do you have, and right. you know, how do you initiate on your own behalf and take your career into your own hands, right? So right. you know, while upskilling is an HR thing, right, it's going to land with HR,
right,
it's really incumbent upon everybody to continually think about what it means for them.
Right, right. And so the coaching thing and the coaching culture and getting managers who coach and this understanding this impact of coaching, which is getting, it's ubiquitous, right? Everybody, we don't have to sell you on that. Mm-hmm. And I think the platforms, right? I was watching TV the other day and Michael Phelps shows up and doing an ad for a coaching app.
Oh, really?
Yeah, right? Everybody should have a chance to talk. And so I was like, wow, right? There's this thought partner. You're not alone in this development effort in life. And that's mm-hmm. that's a good thing. And that's kind of becoming a thing. And I think that's a huge opportunity for coaches. And I think it's a huge opportunity for companies to start to leverage coaching deeper and wider.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And if you're going to nail down the skills gap thing, coaching at all levels is a huge strategy.
Yes. Coaching, identifying that those gaps are, identifying where coaching can play a role and where actually hard skill development needs to play a role, mm-hmm. differentiating between the two, I think, and creating a roadmap is going to be critical for HR departments this year to really knuckle down mm-hmm. and get clear on what it looks like for them mm-hmm. long-term. Because we talked earlier about it's an acquisition tool. It's your brand booster. It's a retention tool. Mm-hmm. And the reverse is all true if you don't do it well.
That's right.
Retention becomes a problem. Acquisition becomes a problem. And that war for talent is not going to change. It's not going away.
That's right. It's only going to get harder. Yeah. It's only going to get harder. And if you're a learner and you understand yourself and you can self-initiate and you can find your own skills gaps, you can control your career at a level that you haven't been able to before.
Right. Right.
Right.
Wow. That's a great topic.
It is.
Talking about this.
It is. All right. Well, hopefully that was helpful for all of you who are listening and driving to work thinking about, wow, I've got some people at my office who need some training.
Need some training and what's your role in it and what can you do and what can you do? Go back if you're not in HR, how can you support your HR department
right.
in helping them figure out what needs to be done?
Right. What's the ask and how's the guiding and all that stuff. But get to the figure out what your priorities are. What are the skills? What are the things you're missing? Get down into the nuts and bolts and quit just talking about it as a problem.
Right. Not just hard skills though.
Not just hard skills.
As well.
Everybody's job is technology. Right? We all know that because we tie that to the results, but mm-hmm. your results aren't going to get any better if your people don't close their soft skills gaps, because soft skills are the thing that makes the difference.
Well said. Well said.
All right, everybody. Enjoy your day.
All right, Jen. Thanks so much. Look forward to our next podcast in the next couple of weeks. And You take care.
All right. You too. Thanks, Sandy.
Right. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening, and please visit Sandy's website at satoriconsultinginc.ca. That's SATORI consultinginc.ca, and Jen's website at managementpossible.com. Thanks again.